Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
So how many of you can relate to the Modern Family? Anybody else watch that show? It's a pretty awesome show. If you've never seen it, up until that point, Mom and Dad, Mike and Vanessa, have played favorites, and it's been a theme through most of the episodes at some point. Evie, the youngest, is always referred to as the son Dad never had because he loves her so much and she does all the outdoor stuff. And how many of you have siblings? How many of you know that one of your siblings is the favorite? How many of you are the favorite? How many of you are a single kid and you don't know who the favorite is? You're like Mandy. Mandy always puts her foot in her mouth like, Mom lives with her husband. Yeah, the show is pretty awesome. If you've never seen it, it's good comedy. But that really kind of goes into the line of what we want to talk about today. Pastor Steve started a series a couple of weeks ago on Mother's Day about the modern family. How many understand the modern family is difficult at best? Yeah, I mean it's a difficult thing to just be in a relationship is difficult, let alone live with the person you're trying to have a relationship with, and then you throw kids in the mix, and it's just difficult. But you know, it's not just the modern family that was difficult. This goes all the way back to biblical days. And so Pastor Steve started a series about the modern family a few weeks ago, and he started out with the term honor. And he kind of defined honor and respect. And most of us think respect and honor are the same, but they're really not. Respect is something you earn. Honor is something I give you based on your position, based on your title, based on a place that I esteem with great value. So we are told to honor our father and our mother. How many, you don't raise your hands, how many got a mother or a father that maybe isn't respectful? We still honor them anyway. Why do we do that? Because it's the value that I place on that position. It's the value that I place on that motherhood, on that fatherhood. We all have a connection. We all have a desire to have a good mother, to have a good father. You know, it's the same way. We honor the presidency. Don't necessarily respect who's in the office. As a military person, many of you are military, we honor the position of the commander. We don't necessarily respect them. That's something that they earn. In fact, in my history as a first sergeant, my job was to be the go-between between the commander and the enlisted troops. And for the most part, I had commanders that made that very simple. They were very respectful people. They earned the respect of the troops. I have one guy to this day I ask God every time I think about him, why in the world was he in my life? I couldn't even get him to say hi to the enlisted troops, let alone earn their respect. But I taught the troops, you still honor that position. You don't disrespect that position. You don't dishonor that position. And so there's a difference between honor and respect. And then Pastor Steve last week talked about blessing and as parents. And I'd go even beyond that, as individuals, we need to be a conduit of blessing to those around us. We need to honor the positions because that's what God teaches us to do, honor all men. But we need to bless those that God puts in our path. And that's something that we have to intentionally pursue. That's something that we have to do all the time. It's not something that we can just unintentionally end up with. As I was preparing this morning, I took a break and listened to another message just to calm my nerves and to help prepare me. And it had really, I didn't think it had anything to do with this message. But as I listened to it, I realized there were some parallels. How many have ever been lost? I mean, literally like driving and you got lost. Now, how long did it take you to figure out you were lost? Till you got to the destination you weren't trying for. And so many of us in life are doing just that. We're going through life and we don't really know where we're going, and we're headed for a destination that we don't know where it's going to end up. Because we're going through this life unintentionally. We don't have really a... how many had planned on being somewhere else financially than you are right now? How'd you get there? The road that you were on took you there. Like for me, you know, my mom, every time she had a credit card, she'd max it out. That was her lifestyle. I'm not picking on it, it's just her lifestyle, using an example. So what do you think I did when I got credit cards? I maxed them out. Why do you think I did that? That's what I was taught. But life's more caught than taught, right? We see what other people do. They can tell us all they want. Hey, don't max out credit cards, and they max out credit cards. So I'm going to catch that, and that's what I'm going to do in my life. And so just a simple example of that. And so we have to be intentional about what we do, because the direction you're moving determines your destination. You might be lost and don't even know it. You might be headed down a path that you really don't want to be. And so how many got great intentions? How many know what the difference between intentions and destination is? Like I intend to live on a budget, but I never sit down and do a budget. I have great intentions. What's the difference between intentions and my destination? Actions. Yeah, actions. Because I have the greatest intentions, but if I never act on those intentions, guess where I'm going? Not where I want to be. Right? And so here's why we want to draw this modern family to a close, is you get to choose whether you want to live an honoring and blessed life. You can have the greatest intentions. How many of you have ever said, I do not want to do what my parents did? How many of you did it anyway? Why? It's what we were taught. And we never set out anything else to do anything different, and so we just headed down the path that we were already on, and we never chose anything different. And this morning, we're going to take a look real quickly. This is like a whole series. This is like over half the book of Genesis we're going to try to run through. And so let me give you the background of it. There's Abraham, who's the patriarch, the father of the nation of Israel. And so Abraham has two sons. And so the two sons that he had were Isaac and Ishmael. And Abraham played favorites. Abraham was a liar. Abraham did all kinds of negative things in his life. They're all recorded for us. It's not anything new. But Abraham played favorites, and he chose Isaac over Ishmael. You know, let me get you to guess. What do you think Isaac did when he had children? He chose a favorite. In fact, in Genesis chapter 25 and verse 28, it says this: Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, well, he loved his son Esau. He was a daddy's boy. But Rebekah, his wife, loved Jacob. Why? Because he's a mama's boy. Esau went out. He was a manly man. He went out and killed things, and Dad loved that about him. And so Dad treated him differently. We don't see all that, but that's what it's implying when it says that he loved Esau and Rebekah loved Jacob. Well, it was time for the bestowing of the birthright on the next generation. And so Rebekah, who loved Jacob, came up with this plot to trick Dad, to trick Isaac. And so they tricked Isaac, and Jacob stole his brother's birthright. Why? Because Mom loved him more than Esau. You see a picture here. It's generational. And I want to say this. Use a phrase from us. Jacob looked at what Abraham did when he had favorites in Isaac. Then he looked at what Isaac did and his favorites with Esau over him. And Jacob said, hey, Dad, hold my beer and watch what I can do. Anybody know how that goes, right? Right? It's going to get worse. So Jacob takes what his father did and his grandfather did and magnified it to the greatest potential that he could. And he's known as the deceiver. It's not just a little lie anymore. You see, Pastor Steve talked, I can't remember whether it's in men's group or on a Sunday morning, he talked about a future president who said this: I wanted to tell the truth, I just didn't want to be helpful. I wanted to tell the truth, I just didn't want to be helpful. And so Abraham told the truth, but he wasn't helpful in the situation. Well, Isaac comes along, and he sees that, and he begins to multiply that. Jacob comes along, and he's like, I'm just not even going to tell the truth. And I don't want to be helpful. I just want to be deceptive, and I just want to do the things that I want to do. And so he multiplies that, and we get down to Joseph. And Joseph covers from Genesis chapter 37 to Genesis chapter 50, the end of the book. And it says this in Genesis 37, verse 2 and verse 3. This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17 years old, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. That's a problem right there, just different issue, different thing. And he brought back their father a bad report about his brothers. Let me ask you a question. At the age of 17, what do you think has happened in Joseph's life that he thinks it's acceptable to come and tattletale on his brothers? Anybody been a tattletale? Anybody been told on? Come on, I know there's more hands than that. But so at 17, what do you think has happened in his life that he thinks it's acceptable for me to come and tell dad? Because let me ask you this. Do you think his brothers, everything they did was wrong? Or do you think just some of the things they did was wrong? It's our focus, right? So there are some things that his brothers did that were right. He could have easily come back and told his dad, hey, look at all my brothers did. These were great things that they did. But no, he focuses and says, look at what they've done wrong. Why do you think he did that? Same reason we tell. So we look better in the eyes of the person that we're telling. And so look at the next verse in chapter 4, in verse 4, in verse 3. Now Israel, Jacob loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age and he had made him a coat of many colors or ornate cloth. So we don't get that. So let me just put it in our terms. How many of you got two kids or more? How many have ever bought one kid a pair of $200 tennis shoes and the other a pair of tennis shoes from the Goodwill? Come on now. It's the same thing. We give one kid something that we wouldn't give the other one, and we go to the other place and give the other one something that we would never give this child. That's exactly what's happened here. So he's taken the greatest of the material, he's had it fashioned into a coat, and he's given it to his, quote, youngest son. What do you think the older sons felt like? Well, let's look and see. In verse 4, when his brothers saw that their father loved Jacob or Joseph more than any of them, they hated him. Anybody got siblings they hate? Come on. At some point, did you hate your siblings? Yeah, okay. All right. Now watch. It's not just a hatred. It goes beyond that. For they could not even speak one single kind word. Word about him. Where do you think they learned that? From the guy that told his dad and his granddad, you think you guys got this down? Here, hold my beer. And let me show you how this works. Let me show you how the deception works. Let me show you how the lies work. Let me show you how this favoritism things work. Let me show you how this is really done. And so he taught his sons. Whether he intentionally did it or not is not the issue. He taught his sons. He taught them so well, they couldn't say one positive thing about their brother. That's a pretty deep hatred. How many of you got more than one child? So with the first child, how many of you got, in today's technology especially, how many of you got here's the first day home picture. Here's the first week home picture. Here's the 1 month picture. Here's the 2 month picture. Here's the 3 month picture. How many had a second child? How many of you got, here's the first day home picture. Oh, crap. Here's the 3 month picture. Right? Anybody with me? Right? How many of you got more than two? And you got no pictures. Right? Right? There's just like this lapse. Like it's all that newness has wore off. You got no pictures. Now, we laugh about it. We joke about it. But what do you think your kids are going to do when they go back and look at those pictures? So we got some splaining to do. I got three granddaughters. We're missing a birthday. Like, we have no pictures of one of their birthdays. We know we threw a party. We can remember the theme. Ain't one grandparent, ain't one aunt, ain't one uncle, ain't nobody got any pictures. It's like that birthday just didn't happen. We don't have a clue. It's not intentional. But if you're not intentionally doing something, you're unintentionally doing something else. And this is all about choosing to do the right thing. And so we get this idea that here's this 17-year-old. His brothers already hate him. There's all this other stuff that's going on. Dad is teaching them these things. And so we get down to Genesis chapter 37, verse 5 through 11. I'm not going to read all this. I'm just going to paraphrase it for you. So here's this 17-year-old. And he has a dream. Not that dream. This dream is probably, anybody ever had a story to tell and after they tell it, they said, man, I probably shouldn't have told that? That's one of these times. So here's a 17-year-old who's favored by his father, and he has a dream. And in the first dream, the dream is this. You, my brothers, are going to bow and worship me. Now, they already hate you. This ain't going to help. He has a second dream. Guess what that dream is? You, my brothers, oh, yeah, and you, Daddy, you think you got this down. You all going to bow and worship me. I'm just going to say, as a 17-year-old, if you have that dream, shut up. Just keep your mouth closed. Some things are better left unsaid because this ain't going to go well. Genesis chapter 37, verse 12 through 36. The brothers, because he's the favorite, he's home with dad. The brothers are out tending the sheep. Because he's such a good tattletaler and his dad loves him so much, dad says, hey, go see what you brothers are up to. So he heads off, and he's walking across the fields, and he finally sees the brothers, but they see him first, and they say this, hey, look, there's the dreamer. In other words, there's the guy that thinks we're going to bow down to him. We're going to show him something different. And so they concoct a scheme, and they're going to kill him. Now, Reuben, who's the oldest of the children, says, hey, we can't kill him. Now, there's all kinds of, why did he say that? There's all these different takes on it. I don't know why he said it. But here's what would happen. If younger brother had died and he was the favorite, guess what would happen to older brother? He would take all the punishment. Have you ever had to go home and tell mom and dad something that happened that you didn't want to deliver that message? Just think what he would have had to go home and tell dad. Hey, your favorite son is dead. So he says, don't kill him. Hey, there's a big cistern in here. There's a big hole in the ground. Let's just throw him in there and teach him a lesson. So Reuben and all his brothers throw him in the hole in the ground, and they teach him a lesson. But Reuben disappears. We don't know where he went. He leaves the scene. And while he's gone, his brothers see a band of people coming across the desert, and they say, hey, look, we can sell our brother to them. How many of you ever want to sell one of your siblings? Yeah. So I have a sibling that's 10 years younger than me. I call him Oops. Like, he wasn't supposed to be here. I was the youngest. Anybody with me? Anybody got a sibling that's that far younger than them? It's ridiculous. You see, how many of your grandparents? Yeah. You treat your grandkids different. You teach your kids, don't you? Now, live with that. Like, my mom, like, she would let my brother get away with stuff that, I mean, I would never get away with. Live with that. He's a oops. He shouldn't be here. And so here's this idea that they're going to sell their brother. Reuben comes back. He's not in the well. His coat's there. They kept that. Dad's favorite kid, huh? You just go off to a war somewhere. You go off and be a slave somewhere. We're keeping your coat, though. And so Reuben's like, what'd you do with him? We sold him. Well, we can't tell dad that. So remember earlier? I want to be truthful but not helpful. So they rip up the coat like some animal shredded it. They dip it in blood and they take it to dad. And dad says, hey, is that my son's coat? Yeah, that's your son's coat. I'm truthful. He must have been mauled by a bear. Silence. I ain't helpful. Wonder where they learned that from. Wonder where we learned it from. Have you ever badmouthed your boss in front of your kids? Have you ever badmouthed your spouse in front of your kids? And then you get upset when they do the very same thing? They catch much more than you say, than you try to teach. They see it, they watch you, they pull it in, they apply it to their life, and they do exactly what they see you do. From this point forward, Joseph is on a roller coaster ride. I encourage you to go home and read Genesis chapter 12 through the end of the book just to get a feel for this whole story, to see how generationally this has been passed down. And now we have Joseph at age 17 that has this crisis in his life. And so he's faced with a choice. Do I keep going down this path that's leading to a destination that I don't want to be on? I have no control over my life now. I am a slave. Or do I make changes in my life and honor God and be a blessing to those people around me? I want you to understand that's what Joseph chooses to do. But also at the end of this, I want you to see that his brothers never make this decision. Now, his was at 17. Mine was at 40. When will yours be? At some point in your life, you're going to face a crisis and you're going to have to make some decisions. You're going to wake up one day and say, I never wanted to be my mom and dad. I never wanted to do what they did, but now I've done the exact same thing to my kids and we need to stop the generational curses. At some point, at some place in your life, hopefully you will face this crisis and you'll choose to change. Joseph was sold into slavery in Genesis chapter 39, verses 1 through 6. A guy named Potiphar bought him. He was brought into this environment. Potiphar looked at him and said, hey, he looks like a good slave. I'll buy him. And so Joseph went into slavery, and he just said this in his mind. He said, you know what? I'm going to honor God because whatever I do, I need to honor what God has brought me to. And I am just going to be a blessing to everybody around me. And see, he could have sulked. Anybody ever have something bad happen to him? You just spend days just sulking? I mean, I used to sulk for months. Yeah, I didn't want to say that, but yeah, months, years even. You don't believe me? My wife's here somewhere. She'll tell you. Yeah, it was as an adult, not as a kid, as an adult. Like I said, my crisis was at 40. We had been married since 19. Do the math. That's a long time to be married to a guy that sulks. You laugh. What are you sulking about? He chooses. I'm going to honor God and I'm going to bless everybody around. And God blesses him for it. Potiphar notices and he raises him up into his household. Potiphar was one of Pharaoh's right-hand men and he was over all the prisoner guards. And so here's Joseph, a prisoner who's now one step below Potiphar because of honoring God and blessing everybody he comes in contact with. God blesses him for it. Then Potiphar's wife, real quick now, Potiphar's wife looks at him. Here's Joseph. He doesn't have the dad bod. It said he was handsome and well-built. Not this. Handsome and well-built. So she looks at him. He's like, I like him. And he's like, no. I'm going to honor Potiphar. I'm going to honor myself. I'm going to honor you. I am not going to dishonor anybody in this process and let things fall where they be. So she accuses him. He gets thrown into jail. Guess what happens when he gets into jail? He doesn't sulk. He does what he's always done at this point. He begins to honor God right where he's at, midst of jail. He doesn't deserve to be there. Doesn't deserve to be in slavery. He doesn't deserve any of this. And he says, I'm going to honor God, and I'm going to bless those around me. And as he does that, the guy that's in charge of the prisoners looks at him and he says, that's an honorable guy. I think I'll promote him. And so here's this prisoner who's now over all the other prisoners. Why? Because he's choosing a life of honor and blessing. One day, two guys get thrown in jail. One's the cupbearer. He's the guy that he takes the cup and he sips the wine before Pharaoh drinks. You know why? In case it's poison. How many want that job? Yeah, me neither, right? And he wanted to go back to the job. Really? I'd just soon take prison. But he has a dream. And Joseph says, in 3 days, Pharaoh is going to bring you back and place you back as the cupbearer. He's like, great. Okay. There's another guy. He's the baker. He has a dream. And he tells Joseph the dream. And Joseph's like, I don't want to tell you what that dream means. He's like, no, tell me. In 3 days, Pharaoh's going to cut your head off. He looks at the other guy. He says, hey, remember me when you're set free. 2 years later, here's Joseph in prison for something he never did, a slave for something he never should have been in slavery for. And yet he's still honoring God and blessing those around him as best as he can, even in the midst of all of this. And so Pharaoh has a dream 2 years later. None of Pharaoh's men can interpret the dream. And the cupbearer, he's like, oh, yeah. There's this guy in prison, and he can interpret your dream. His name's Joseph. And so they go get Joseph, clean him up. They made sure to put that in there. They had to clean him up before he could face Pharaoh. That should just bring some things to mind. So he goes before Pharaoh, and here's where I really think we find the fact that he has chosen to change. Pharaoh says, hey, can you interpret my dreams? And Joseph says, no. Genesis 41:16, I cannot interpret your dream, but God can interpret. and will. How many of us would have said, yeah, I can interpret your dream. I don't want to go back to prison. I got this covered. How many of us would have made up an interpretation to stay out of prison? Right? We would have made up something. And that would have been in line with what he had been taught, right? He comes from a line of deceivers and liars. In fact, his father was the king of them. So that would have been in line with what he was taught. But somewhere in the process, he chose a different path because he didn't like the destination that he saw. And so he gets down to here and he says, I cannot, but God can and he will. And he says this, after he interprets the dream, he says, you need to find somebody that will be a blessing to everybody. You need to find somebody that in the seven, there were 7 years of goodness that were coming and 7 years of badness that were coming. And he said, in those 7 years of goodness, you need to find somebody that will collect and will gather and will bring in. So during the 7 years of famine, 7 years of badness, there will be more than enough to provide for everybody. You need to find somebody that will be a blessing. And Pharaoh just simply looked right at Joseph and he said, I don't need to look any further, for you're the man. Joseph chose a different destination. And he turned his life around and said, I'm choosing to do things differently than what I've been taught. Now, Pastor Steve, a few weeks ago, said this when Jesus was resurrected and he saw his brother James. He made this statement. I think it's hilarious because I'm a sarcastic guy, just be honest. He said, I wonder if Jesus looked at James and said, how do you like me now? So during the years of famine, guess who shows up on Joseph's doorstep? But his brothers. And you know, in my sarcasm, is anybody else with me on this? I'd have been like, how do you like me now? Right? I told you, you're going to bow and worship me, because guess where they were? They came before Joseph. They didn't know it was Joseph. They came before Joseph. And they had to bow before Joseph and ask for forgiveness. It's all written down. And they go back and they get their little brother and they bring him back. And again, they're bowing before Joseph. He never brings up the dream. How many of us would have brought up the dream? How many of us have ever said to somebody that, you know, we gave them advice and they refused to take advice, and now you know what it's like to be a pastor. And you get down and they do the same very same thing that you told them not to do. And how many of us have ever thought or even said, I told you so? Right? You never find Joseph saying this. You never find Joseph even remotely coming close to this. All that Joseph ever says is what you meant for evil, God meant for good. What you meant to bring harm and destruction and bitterness and wrath, God meant for good. That's all he ever says. Joseph had changed. So they go back and they get Isaac, and they bring Isaac and they bring the whole family because there's such a bad famine in the land. And Isaac is living there for a while, and he gets older and he's about to die. And so Joseph asked Isaac to come in and bless his children. Now, I don't have time to go into all of this, but enough to say this. There's a point where Isaac is going to bless the two sons of Joseph. And the oldest should have always got the birthright, right hand. And the youngest gets the left hand. It's just the culture that day. And so Joseph sets up his sons to get the blessing from Isaac, and Isaac crosses his hands. Now we know the end of the story. We understand this. But Isaac crosses his hands. Joseph doesn't know what God has intended. And Joseph says this, stop. And I think a lot of us might just pass that by. But I think if you start looking at the history, I think Joseph has stood up at this moment in his life and he said, stop playing favorites and bless the children where they are for who they are. You see, at some point, we have to, as parents, stop allowing generational sins to impact the next generation. We have to stop playing favorites. We have to stop teaching bad financial practices. We have to stop teaching bad relational practices. We have to stop whatever it is that's generational in our life. For me, it's a multitude of things. My dad was an alcoholic. I have a high tolerance for alcohol. My son has a high tolerance for alcohol. But at some point, we had to stand up and say, stop. Because it's destroying our family. For me, it's my mom. Maybe you understand this. How do you deal with conflict in relationships? Do you sit quietly and talk logically and figure out what the best course of action is? Or do you elevate your voices until one of you gets louder and louder and louder and louder, and finally the other one just be quiet and I get my way? That's how I was taught. It's pretty effective to get what I want, but it's horrible, horrible at solving any problems. Anybody relate with this? I mean, or maybe you come from a family that the way that you dealt with conflict is you just ignored it, just walked away. Does that work? No. And so at some point, we have to stop the generational curses, these generational sins. And I think in part, that is what Joseph is telling his father. Stop playing favorites. Now, he didn't know that God intended for something there. But I think the vision, the visual is we have to stop. Now, here is the sad thing. In Genesis chapter 50, verses 15 to 21, Dad has died. Isaac is dead. He's got his brothers there who sold him into slavery. His brothers have never changed. Why do I say that? When Dad dies, got to remember, they sold their brother, who's now in charge of all the land right underneath Pharaoh. Would you be scared? Dad, your protector, is gone. So instead of coming to him and saying, hey, we screwed up, will you forgive us? Here's what they say. We need to go tell him that Dad said before he died to forgive us. Guess what's not written in Scripture? Dad said before he died to forgive us. It's a lie. Where did they learn it? Dad. You see, they never change, and they're on the same destination that they've always been on. They're on the same road to destruction. They're on the same road to bitterness. They're on the same road. They've never changed. And guess who's getting taught? All of their children. Now follow out the nation of Israel from that point forward. And you see this over and over and over and over. At some point in our life, there is going to be a crisis where we have a choice to stand up and say, stop, let's change this, let's don't go down this path anymore, let's do something different. Even if it's not right, it won't be the same problem. It won't be the same generational curse. I have a pastor friend on the peninsula that comes from a very large family. In fact, he comes from a family of very large families. He was, I believe, is one of nine children. He'll tell you stories how his brothers, he wasn't the youngest, I don't think, but his brothers and sisters would lock him in closets for hours. Like, they hated him. He says, I don't know why. They would literally just lock him in closets for hours. And as he began to look into their history of their family, guess what happened in the previous generation? There was one child that was singled out, that was bullied, that was locked away for hours, wherever it was. Maybe it wasn't a closet, but it was just something. And generational, this was a thing. Now, let me ask you a question. If you were that child, how many of you would have children? I'd be like, no. I don't want anybody to experience this. I don't want anybody to go through this. Maybe you're here this morning and your parents were like mine. My dad was an alcoholic. I could have easily said, I don't want to have kids. I have that tendency. I don't want to pass that on to the next generation. I don't want to do it. Maybe you come from an addict of some sort, and you come from that. Or maybe you come from an angry relationship. And his name is Chris. Here's what Chris did. Chris has nine kids. He's got nine kids. Why in the world would you want one of your kids to be locked in a closet? But here's the thing that Chris said him and his wife started to have kids. He said, we are not going to allow this to happen in our family. We are stopping this generational curse. Guess what all his kids, he's got eight. He came from nine, he's got eight. Yeah, here's how I know it. He wants 40 grandkids. I told him he's shooting too low. Eight times eight is 64, right? Yeah, at a minimum. Even eight times seven is 56. Come on. Here's the thing. When you talk to his kids, they have such a blessed in honoring childhood that they cannot wait to have kids. I think he's got 5 or 6 grandkids already. What a change in a generation. You see, the choice is yours. When the crisis comes, what will you choose? Father, we love you and praise you and thank you for who you are. We thank you that we have all these depictions in Scripture, as ugly as they are, you've placed them there for a purpose. And so much of that purpose is for us to even know what not to do. And so, Father, I pray you give us the wisdom and the strength to choose correctly. But not just to choose correctly, but to follow through. That it's not just about intentions, but it's about action. It's easy to listen to a message like this and jab our spouse or poke one of our friends and go, man, you guys really need to listen to this. And it's a whole different thing for us to take it to heart and to run after you and choose something different for our destination. We pray that you would give us the strength to do that in Christ's name. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.